Truck Audio Tales.
Brought to you by BunnySlippers.com. Check out their brand new Dino Sound Slippers. Slippers make a roaring sound every 3 steps. Made with green scaly fabric, soft plush uppers, foam footbeds, non-slip grips on soles, and 3 white claws on each foot. One size fits most, up to women's 10.5, men's 9. Footbed measures 10.5. Black Clock Audio Tales is a daily podcast that reads you a story, either a chapter of a novel or a whole short story. Join us in our exploration of old ghost stories, supernatural fiction, horror tales, folk tales, fantasy, gothic horror, weird fiction, and cosmic horror. And don't forget to join us for our monthly show about the Cthulhu mythos. Look for our podcast near the old wishing well in the blasted heath, wherever you find your podcasts. We suggest Podbean or Apple Podcasts. Find us on the web at pgttcm.com and at Black Clock Audio on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and Black Clock Audio Tales on YouTube. Welcome to Black Clock Audio Tales. Check out our new website over at www.pgttcm.com. Edited by Daniel Spitzer, music by Kevin MacLeod. The Chamber, Oppressive Gloom, Despair. Welcome to Part 1, Folklore of Great Britain.
Join us at the end of the month when we talk about the Great Old Ones.
Chapter 18 of Welsh Fairy Tales. Chapter 18, The King's Footholder. There was a curious custom in the far olden times of Wales. At the banqueting hall, the king of the country would sit with his feet in the lap of a high officer. Whenever his majesty sat down to dinner, this official person would be under the table holding the royal feet. This was also the case while all sat around the evening fire in the middle of the hall. This foot-holding person was one of the king's staff, and every castle must have a human footstool as part of its furniture. By and by, it became the fashion for pretty maidens to seek this task, or to be chosen for this office. The names in English sounded like footies, orthoped, or footlights. When she was a plump and petite maid, they nicknamed her 12 inches, or when unusually soothing in her caresses of the soft royal toes. It was considered a high honor to be the king's footholder. In after centuries, it was often boasted that such and such an ancestor held this honorable service. One picture of castle life, as given in one of the old books, tells of how came the king's officer went to the mead cellar with a golden cup to get a drink that would keep them all wide awake. He also brought a handful of skewers on, which they were to broil on the callops or bits of meat at the fire. While they were doing this, the king sat upon a seat of green rushes, over which was spread a flame-colored satin cover, with a cushion like it for his elbow to rest upon. In the evening, the harpers and singers made music, the bards recited poetry, or the good storytellers told tales of heroes and wonders. During all this time, one or more maidens held the king's feet, or took turns at it, when tired. For often the revels or songs and tales lasted far into the night. At intervals, if the story was dull, or if he had too much dinner, or had been out hunting and got tired, his majesty took a nap, with his feet resting upon the lap of a pretty maiden. This happened often in the late hours, while they were getting the liquid refreshments ready. Then the king's chamberlain gently nudged him to be wide awake, and he again enjoyed the music and the stories while his feet were held. For altogether it was great fun. Now there was once a prince of Gwynedd in Wales named Math, who was so fond of having his feet held that he neglected to govern his people properly. He spent all his time lounging in an easy chair, while a pretty maiden held his heels and toes. He committed all public cares to 2 of his nephews. These were named for short, Gilly and Gwed. The one whom the king loved the best to have her hold his feet was the fairest maiden in all the land, and she was named Gawain. By and by, the prince grew so fond of having his feet held, and stroked, and patted, and played with, by Gawain, that he declared he could not live unless Gawain held his feet. And, she said, if she did not hold the king's feet, she would die. Now this Gilly, one of the king's nephews, son of Don, whom he appointed to look day by day after public affairs, would often be in the hall at night. He listened to the music and stories, and seeing Gawain, the king's footholder, he fell in love with her. His eye usually wandered from the storyteller to the lovely girl holding the king's feet, and he thought her as beautiful as an angel. Soon he became so lovesick that he felt he could risk or give his life to get and have her for his own. But what would the king say? Besides, he soon found out that the maiden Gawain cared nothing for him. Nevertheless, the passion of the lovelorn youth burned hotly and kept increasing. He confided his secret to his brother Gwed and asked his aid, which he promised. So one day the brother went to King Math and begged for leave to go to Prideri. In the king's name, he would ask from him the gift of a herd of swine, a famous breed, which in quality of pork they furnished, excelled all other pigs known. They were finer than any seen in the land, or ever heard of before. Their flesh was said to be sweeter, juicier, and more tender than the best beef. Even their manners were better than those of some men. In fact, these famous pigs were a present from the king of Fairyland. So highly were they prized that King Math doubted much whether his nephew could get them at any price. In ancient Wales, the bards and poet singers were welcomed and trusted above all men, and this, whether in the palace or in the cottage. So Gwed, the brother of the lovesick one, in order to get the herd of surpassing swine, took 10 companions, all young men and strong, dressed as bards, and pretending by their actions to be such. Then they all started out together to seek the palace of Prideri. Having arrived, they were entertained at a great feast in the castle hall. There Prideri sat on his throne chair, with his feet in the maiden's lap. The dinner over, Gwed was asked to tell a story. This he did, delighting everyone so much that he was voted a jolly good fellow by all. In fact, Prideri felt ready to give him anything he might demand, excepting always his footholder. At once, Gwed made request to give him the herd of swine. At this, the countenance of Prideri fell, for he had made a promise to his people that he would not sell or give away the swine until they had produced double their number in the land, for there was no pigs and no pork like theirs to be bought anywhere. Now this Gwed was not very cunning, but he had the power of using magic arts. By these he could draw the veil of illusion over both the mind and eyes of people. So he made answer to Prideri's objections thus: "Keep your promise to your people, O most honored Prideri, and only exchange them for the gift I make thee," said Gwed. Thereupon, exerting his powers of magic, he created the illusion of 12 superb horses. These were all saddled, bridled, and magnificently caparisoned. But after 24 hours, they would vanish from sight. The illusion would be over. With these steeds, so fitted for hunting, were 12 sleek fleet hounds. Taken all together, here was a sight to make a hunter's eyes dance with delight. So Prideri gave Gwed the swine, and he quickly drove them off. "For," he whispered to his companion fellows in knavery, "the illusion will only last until the same hour tomorrow." And so it happened, for when Prideri's men went to the stables to groom the horses and feed the hounds, there was nothing in either the stables or the kennels. When they told this to Prideri, he at once blew his horn and assembled his knights to invade the country of Gwynedd, to recover his swine. Hearing of his coming, King Math went out to meet Prideri in battle. But while he was away with his army, Gilly the lover seized the beautiful maiden Gawain, who held the king's feet in her lap. She was not willing to marry Gilly, but he eloped with her and carried her off to his cottage. The war which now raged was finally decided by single combat, as was the custom in old days. By this, the burning of the peasants' houses and the ruin which threatened the whole country ended, and peace came. It was not alone by the strength and fierceness of King Math, but also by the magic spells of Gwed, that Pryderi was slain. After burying the hero, King Math came back to his palace and found out what Gilly had done. Then he took Gawain away from Gilly, and to make amends for her trouble, in being thus torn from his palace, King Math made her his queen. Then the lovely Gawain shared his throne, covered with the flame-colored satin. One of the most beautiful maidens of the court was chosen to hold his feet, until such time as a permanent choice was made. As for the two nephews, who had fled from the wrath of their princely uncle, they were put under bans as outlaws, and had to live on the borders of the kingdoms. No one of the king's people was allowed to give them food or drink, yet they would not obey the summons of the king to come and receive their punishment. But at last, tired of being deserted by all good men and women, they repented in sorrow. Hungry, ragged, and forlorn, they came to their uncle, the king, to submit themselves to be punished. When they appeared, Math spoke roughly to them and said, "You cannot make amends for the shame you have brought upon me. Yet since you obey and are sorry, I shall punish you for a time and then pardon you. You are to do penance for 3 years at least." Then they were changed into wild deer, and he told them to come back after 12 months. At the end of the year, they returned, bringing with them a young fawn. As this creature was entirely innocent, it was given a human form and baptized in the church. But the two brothers were changed into wild swine and driven off to find their food in the forest. At the end of the year, they came back with a young pig. The king had that little animal changed into a human being, which, like every mother's child at the time, received baptism. Again, the brothers were transformed into animal shape, this time as wolves, and were driven out to the hills. At the end of 12 months' period, they came back, three in number, for one was a cub. By this time, the penance of the naughty nephews was over, and they were now to be delivered from all magic spells. So their human nature was restored to them, but they must be washed thoroughly. In the first place, it took much hot water and lye, made from the wood ashes, and then a great deal of scrubbing to make them presentable. Then they were anointed with a sweet-smelling oil, and the king ordered them to be arrayed in elegant apparel. They were appointed to hold honorable office at court, and from time to time go out through the country and call the officers to attend public business. When the time came that the king sought for one of the most beautiful maidens who should hold his feet, Gwed nominated to the prince's notice his sister, Arinrod. The king was very gracious, and thereafter she held his feet at all banquets. She was looked up to with reverence by all, and held the office for many years. Thus King Math's reputation for grace and mercy was confirmed. Chapter 19 of Welsh Fairy Tales. Powell, Prince of Dyfed. One of the oldest of the Welsh fairy tales tells us of Pwyll, King of Fairyland, and the father of the numerous clan of the Powells. He was a mighty hunter. He could ride a horse, draw a bow, and speak the truth. He was always honored by men, and he kept his faith and his promises to women. The children loved him, for he loved them. In the castle hall, he could tell the best stories. No man, bard or warrior, footholder or commoner, could excel him in gaining and keeping the attention of his hearers, even when they were sleepy and wanted to go to bed. One day, when out hunting in the woods, he noticed a pack of hounds running down a stag. He saw at once that they were not his own, for they were snow-white in color and had red ears. Being a young man, Paul did not know at this time of his life that red is the fairy color and that these dogs were from fairyland. So he drove off these red-eared hounds and was about to let loose his own pack on the stag when a horseman appeared on the scene. The stranger at once began to upbraid Paul for being impolite. He asked why his hound should not be allowed to hunt the deer. Paul spoke pleasantly in reply, making his proper excuses to the horseman. The two began to like each other, and soon got acquainted and mutually enjoyed being companions. It turned out the stranger was Arawan, the king in Fairyland, and he had a rival named Harrigan, who was beating him and his army in war. So Arawan asked Paul to help him against his enemy. He even made requests that 1 year from that time, Paul should meet Harrigan in battle. He told him that one stroke of his sword would finish the enemy. He must then sheathe his weapon, and not on any account strike a second time. To make victory sure, the king fairy would exchange shapes with the mortal ruler, each take not only the place, but each the shape and form of the other. Paul must go into Fairyland and govern the kingdom there, while Erewhon should take charge of the affairs at Dyfed. But Paul was warned again to smite down his enemy with a single stroke of his sword. If in the heat of conflict and the joy of victory, Paul should forget and give a second blow to Harrigan, he would immediately come to life and be as strong as ever. Paul heeded these words. Then, putting on the shape of Erewhon, he went into Fairyland, and no one noticed or thought of anything different from the days and years gone by. But now, at night, a new and unexpected difficulty arose. Erewhon's beautiful wife was evidently not in the secret, for she greeted Paul as her own husband. After dinner, when the telling of stories in the banqueting hall was over, the time had come for them to retire. But the new bedfellow did not even kiss her or say good night, but turned his back to her and his face to the wall, and never moved until daylight. Then the new king in Fairyland rose up, ate his breakfast, and went out to hunt. Every day he ruled the castle and kingdom as if he had always been the monarch. To everybody, he seemed as if he had long been used to public business, and no questions were asked, nor was there any talk made on the subject. Everyone took things as matter of course. Yet, however polite or gracious he might be to the queen during the day, in the evening he spoke not a word, and passed every night as at the first. The 12 months soon sped along, and now the time for battle in single combat between Paul and Harrigan had fully come. The two warriors met in the middle of a river ford and backed their horses for a charge. Then they rushed furiously at each other. Paul's spear struck Harrigan so hard that he was knocked out of the saddle and hurled the length of a lance over and beyond the crupper or tail strap of his horse. He fell mortally wounded upon the ground. Now came the moment of danger and temptation to Paul, for Harrigan cried out, "For the love of heaven, finish your work on me. Slay me with your sword." But Paul was wise and his head was cool. He kept in mind the warning to strike only one blow. He called out loudly so that all could hear him, "I will not repeat that. Slay thee who may, I shall not." So Harrigan, knowing his end had come, bade his nobles bear him away from the river shore. Then Paul, with his armies, overran the two kingdoms of Fairyland and made himself master of all. He took oath of all the princes and nobles, who swore to be loyal to their new master. This done, Paul rode away to the trysting place in a glen, and there he met Erewhon, as had been appointed. They changed shapes, and each became himself as he had been before. Erewhon thanked Paul heartily, and bade him to see what he had done for him. Then each one rode back in his former likeness to his kingdom. Now at Anwen, no one but Erewhon himself knew that anything unusual had taken place. After dinner and the evening storytelling were over, and it was time to go to bed, Erewhon's wife was surprised in double measure. Two things puzzled her. Her husband was now very tender to her, and was also very talkative. Whereas for a whole year, Every night he had been as silent and as immovable as a log. How could it be, in either case? But this time the wife was silent as a statue. Even though Erwin spoke to her 3 times, he received no reply. Then he asked directly of her why she was so silent. She made an answer that for a whole year no word had been spoken in their bedroom. What? He said. Did we not talk together, as always before? No, she said. Not for a year has there been talk or caresses between us. At this answer, Erwan was overcome with surprise, and is struck with admiration at having so good a friend. He burst out first in praise of Paul, and then told his wife all that had happened during the past 12 months. She too was full of admiration, and told her husband that in Paul he had certainly found a true friend. In Dyfed, when Paul had returned to his own land and castle, he called his lords together. Then he asked them to be perfectly frank and free to speak. They must tell him whether they thought him a good king during the year past. All shouted in chorus of approval. Then the spokesman addressed Paul thus, "My lord, never was thy wisdom so great, thy generosity more free, nor thy justice more manifest than during the past year." When he ceased, all the vassals showed their approval of this speech. Then Paul, smiling, told him the story of his adventures in exchanging his form and tasks, at the end of which the spokesman, taking his cue from the happy faces of all his fellow vassals, made reply, "Of a truth, Lord, we pray thee, do thou give thanks to heaven that thou hast formed such a fellowship? Please continue to us the form of the kingdom and rule that we have enjoyed for a year past." Thereupon King Paul took oath, kissing the hilt of his sword, and called on heaven to witness his promise that he would do as they had desired. So the 2 kings confirmed the friendship they had made. Each sent the other rich gifts of jewels, horses, and hounds. In memory of so wonderful and happy a union of a mortal and a fairy, Paul was thereafter, in addition to all his titles, saluted as Lord of Anwen, which is only another name for the land of the fairies.